remain glued to their respective demands, which has heightened the fear of Taliban overtaking rest of Afghanistan in near future.
Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip hailed the Hezbollah's move to fire a barrage of rockets toward the Israeli regime in response to Thursday Israeli air raids on South Lebanon. Palestinians welcomed the move, describing it as a strong message to Israel.
The Lebanese rockets foiled Israeli plans and projects aimed at separating the resistance in the region. It proved that the resistance won't remain silent in the face of the Israeli crimes. The Lebanese response is a message that Israel cannot impose its policies in the region, and the resistance will keep defending its rights.
The Israeli military said its Iron Dome system intercepted 10 of 19 rockets on Friday, with six falling in open areas in a third day of tension across the borders. There have been no reports of casualties or serious damage. Palestinian groups expressed their support to all forms of resistance against Israel and announced their readiness to stand with the resistance movement in Lebanon in defending their rights.
We hail the response of the resistance in Lebanon against Israeli airstrikes. This Lebanese move emphasizes the importance of the resistance in defending its rights and foiling the Israeli policies. The Israeli regime is also still practicing all forms of violence against the Islamic and Arab nations, and the resistance is the only way to put an end to these crimes.
The resistance said it won't allow the Israeli regime to impose new policies in the region and that Israel won't go unpunished for its crimes.
We really welcome the Lebanese move to respond to the Israeli airstrikes in South Lebanon and fire rockets at the occupied territories. We stress that we are all united in resistance to liberating Palestine and getting the Israeli occupation away from the region. We are supporting our brothers in Lebanon, and we are all ready to defend any Israeli aggression against Lebanon.
Palestinian factions here welcome the Lebanese response against the Israeli attacks, stressing on fully supporting the resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli aggression with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has fired dozens of rockets near positions of Israeli occupation forces in the Shabah farms. Hezbollah added that the latest round of rocket fire came in response to the Israeli air raids that hit South Lebanon on Thursday. In an interview with a local agency, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasim stressed that the resistance is much more capable than it was in 2006, yet downplayed the possibility of an all-out war.
In this phase, the resistance is in an extremely high state of readiness, and it cannot even be compared to the level of capability and alertness which was present in 2006. Whether in the arms, preciseness, military planning, training, preparation, and capabilities. And Israel knows this. So if they launch a foolish aggression under any pretext, Hezbollah will be ready.
An Israeli military spokesman stressed that Israel does not wish to escalate to a full war, but is prepared for it. Experts believe Israel was trying to move escalation towards the inside of Lebanon, but the resistance took things back to square one.
The Israelis have been trying for a while to change the rules of engagement with Lebanon, but Hezbollah's resistance has proven today that the Israelis cannot change the status quo as long as there is a resistance which is ready to face the Israeli aggressions. This was not only retaliation to the latest round of Israeli shelling, it was also a warning and a response to all the violations committed by the Israelis, whether in the air, land or sea.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab urged the United Nations interim forces in Lebanon to put pressure on Israel to stop its aggressions against Lebanon's sovereignty. Several statements from Palestinian resistance groups were issued in support of Hezbollah's retaliation, which many see as stressing the full legitimacy of resistance groups to face occupation forces. With no civilian areas targeted from both sides, status quo seems to have remained unchanged. It's the first time the Israelis launched such an attack against Lebanon since the 2006 war. But it's also the first time since then that the Lebanese resistance retaliates with multiple rockets against an Israeli military occupation post. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Following a recent call by the Afghan president on the entire nation to establish a united national front against the Taliban, residents of many cities, including Kabul, have welcomed the call by different moves, such as taking to the streets to chant supportive slogans and joining local armed fronts across the country.
Rural people of Afghanistan widely welcome President Ghani's call for the establishment of a national front against the Taliban. We saw how rural people in Herat and other cities put their unity on show by chanting slogans in support of Afghan military forces. This shows that it is a real national uprising.
The entire nation knows that the Taliban have ruined the infrastructures. They are just after war and violence. So I strongly support Afghan national security and defense forces to stand against Taliban.
Afghan military forces say they are committed to strongly pound terrorists all over Afghanistan, mainly in southern Helmand province, thanks to strong support they are receiving from locals.
A report suggests that the shadow governor of Taliban for Helmand province and a number of top military commanders plus hundreds of them have so far been killed in attacks conducted by our forces. We will strongly pound anyone who stands against the nation, against the republic and the constitution. The Taliban must realize that we are committed to defend our land.
Referring to the recent war crimes committed by Taliban, locals here say, unlike the beliefs of U.S. Special Representative for Afghan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad, who had said that Taliban has changed, the recent advances of Taliban proved that they are still following a dogmatic ideology. Some of the displaced Afghans accused Taliban militants of committing war crimes during their assaults on districts and provincial capitals over the recent month. They say the Taliban have killed civilians, used them as human shields, and destroyed their houses. The only way against the militants' violence, they say, is to resist. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Britain is known to be the hub of terrorist and corrupt fugitive political leaders fled from Pakistan. This is London residence of Altaf Hussain, a leader of Karachi-based ethnic political party. Back home, Hussain was convicted on terrorism and murder charges. Nonetheless, UK never handed him back to Pakistan of being what many believe an intelligence asset of British secret services. This is Ishaq Dar, the former finance minister who fled from Pakistan in 2018 to avert prosecution on money laundering charges. And here comes the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has been staying in these luxurious flats, which judges back in Pakistan found were purchased with the looted public money. However, pressure from Islamabad has now compelled Britain to change its long-held pro-fugitive policy after London decided to expel Nawaz Sharif. His request to further stay in the UK was rejected by Britain. His Pakistani passport is already invalid after Islamabad refused to renew it.
The UK government has been under intense pressure, not only from Pakistan, but various other countries whose fugitive leaders have been living in UK for a long period of time. UK government was under great pressure and under great criticism. And that could be a reason that the UK government basically did not allow Nawaz Sharif to stay on or extend the visa of Nawaz Sharif to stay in UK.
Nawaz Sharif fled Pakistan after plundering public exchequer. He should now come back to Pakistan and must return the money he looted, and after this he can comfortably stay at his home in Pakistan.
Sharif was convicted and sentenced for 10 years on money laundering charges, but was released from jail in November 2019 only for medical treatment for a few weeks. However, since then he has been residing in London despite repeated court orders to return home to face trial of corruption cases. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is fast running out of his legal and political options after Britain decided to expel him. One of the choices analysts believe is to seek shelter in an Arab country after exhausting his all legal options to delay his expulsion from the UK. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Pakistan's president, foreign minister and others joined this rally in support of the people of Kashmir. The rallies were held in Pakistan to mark the second anniversary of India's, what Pakistan says, illegal move to revoke the special status of the disputed Kashmir region. India, on August 5, 2019, abrogated the Article 370 of the Indian Constitution that granted special status to the Jammu and Kashmir region. Pakistan rejected the move as a violation of the UN Security Council resolutions that seek a referendum to decide the final status of Jammu and Kashmir.
I want to assure my Kashmiri brothers that Pakistan will continue to support the people of Kashmir for their right to self-determination. We will continue to support Kashmiris till they get freedom.
Go India, go back!
Separately, Kashmiri leaders also took to the streets in Islamabad. The All Parties Hurriyat Conference staged a protest not far from the Indian High Commission in Islamabad.
We, the Kashmiris, not only in occupied Kashmir, Azad Kashmir or in Pakistan, but over the world where the Kashmiris are present, they are making this day as a black day. Why we are making this day as a black day? Because against the will and wish of the people of the Kashmir, India has abrogated its articles.
Protesters condemned the Indian policy towards Kashmir and vowed to continue their struggle until Kashmiris get their right to self-determination.
Kashmir is a disputed territory as per the United Nations resolutions. The resolutions have been passed and at the behest of the India. It was India who took the Kashmir dispute to the United Nations. And it is India, it is the then Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, who in his communique to Pakistan said, we do not believe in forced marriages and Kashmiris will be given right to self-determination.
Kashmir remains at the heart of tensions between India and Pakistan. The dispute dates back to the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. Both countries have fought wars over the only Muslim majority state controlled by India.
Tensions between India and Pakistan have further deepened since India revoked the special status of Kashmir. Pakistan insists India has to reverse the changes for any talks. India, however, is defending the changes, calling it as its internal matter, and hence the deadlock. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
The brutal battle between Taliban and government forces has intensified recently, with each side struggling to gain more area under their control. Top military officials in southern Helmand province have urged the residents of the city of Lashkargah to evacuate their houses. Reports say Afghan forces are planning to launch a heavy attack on Taliban inside the city of Lashkargah, who use residences of locals as human shields.
We had announced that if a single Talib arrives in Lashkargah city, he will be killed. Even if 1,000 of them arrive, we will kill them all. This fight is not ours. They are Takfiris and slaves of Punjabis. They aren't Afghans. Our fight against them is a pure jihad, and we will continue this holy jihad with a strong will.
Taliban has in recent weeks launched more attacks on provincial capitals, mainly in southern and western Afghanistan. This comes as many have believed neither the government nor the Taliban will achieve their goals to take full control of the country via insisting on further war. They say negotiation is the only solution to resolve the conflicts.
Today, the ancient city of Herat is under attack, and the war has reached inside people's houses in Lashkargah of Helmand. Meanwhile, violence is spreading across the northern Taliban city and other areas. We still hope to reach peace through responsible moves by the government and Taliban.
Based on official figures, over 1,000 Taliban militants have lost their lives in a series of attacks carried out by Afghan air and ground forces backed by local armed fronts since last week. Afghan forces increased their attacks on Taliban militants and liberated some of lost areas, including Nijrab and Talaobarfak districts in northern and northeastern Afghanistan. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani recently called on the entire nation to establish a united national resistance front against the Taliban. He argues that since the Taliban have put military victory on the top of its priorities list, the time has come to talk to militants with guns and resistance. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio. The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, after 20 years of Afghanistan being occupied by the United States, Afghanis as well as neighboring countries continue to call for Afghan unity and security in that nation, something they have not had since its occupation. Well, the Taliban are on the move and have taken control of three provincial capitals in just one day. What does the future hold for Afghanistan? Is this Taliban the same as those of 20 years ago? And did Washington create a scenario to create more tension and chaos in the country? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on The Spotlight.
The Afghan Defense Ministry has confirmed the fall of Shibir Khan, Kunduz and Saripul cities in northern Afghanistan into the hands of the Taliban, saying Afghan troops backed by local armed forces have retreated as an attempt to avoid civilian casualties.
In the meantime, the Defense Ministry also says that government troops backed by local armed forces are planning to conduct a large-scale attack on the captured cities to retake them from the Taliban. A move that, according to military commanders, needs more time.
In such circumstances, locals here look to the ongoing war as unfruitful. They urge the Afghan government the Taliban and the rest of local players to set aside their differences for the sake of people's demand, which is peace and calm.
None of the foreign players can bring a lasting peace to Afghanistan in the absence of a strong unity among us, especially among men players such as the government and the Taliban. They must set aside their differences and work for the sake of people by not relying on foreigners, mainly the U.S.
Many others also believe that there are some secret dealings behind the recent rising Taliban advances. That is why they want some international bodies, mainly the UN, to intervene in an effort to end what they call a proxy war in Afghanistan.
We, the people of Afghanistan, have realized that there are some dirty foreign hands involved in the rising war and bloodshed in our country. That's why we call on the United Nations to intervene and convince the backers of the conflict to stop their proxy wars in Afghanistan.
The Taliban has expanded its attacks over the recent month, capturing over 200 districts in different parts of the country. The militants are gaining more ground despite suffering heavy casualties during their assaults, mainly on big cities. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight, Christoph Horstel, political activist and veteran journalist out of Berlin. And Daniel Lazar, journalist and author out of New York. Well, thank you both for being with us. Let's start it off in Berlin. And Christoph, I mean, what has Washington been doing in Afghanistan for 20 years that when it announces it is leaving, Afghan forces who they have trained appear not to be able to prevent cities from falling in the hands of the Taliban? What did the U.S. accomplish in the country?
Well, that's the big question, next to nothing, as they have the officials all over NATO telling us this now, right now. I have said that a dozen years ago when I wrote my first book on Afghanistan, and we have a very good institution in the U.S. which is called SIGAR, Special Inspector General on Afghanistan Recovery. And they have made, how to say, a whole study costing dozens of millions of dollars, amounting to exactly what I have predicted in 2007. There's a zero outcome for the U.S. They will spill a lot of blood. They will spend a lot of money, billions. And, of course, they will achieve nothing in Afghanistan because you cannot, you know, be successful if you come armed. If you come as a friend, it's fantastic. That is what I did all the time in the last 35 years. And that was a very good experience, especially also with the Taliban, where I enjoy friendships. But also, of course, there are people I cannot talk to. That is, how to say, the range of personalities within the Taliban.
Well, Daniel, I mean, your assessment of what is happening in Afghanistan right now, and as an American, aren't you just frustrated with your government for getting involved in this to begin with and spending all this money and basically accomplishing nothing?
Well, yes. I mean, the American government is amazingly incompetent. And remember, Joe Biden was a very early cheerleader of this war. He was one of the most enthusiastic voices in favor of it back in 2001. But the U.S. went in for very ill-considered reasons. It claimed to want to destroy al-Qaeda, but it let Osama bin Laden slip through its fingers when they had him cornered in Tora Bora near the Pakistani border. And the U.S. poured billions, trillions actually, into that country. But the only effect was to raise corruption to absolutely unheard of levels. So now the country is weaker than ever, and the post-American regime is collapsing faster than the post-Soviet regime did back in 1992. So it's really the post-Soviet regime lasted 3 years, whereas the current regime is lasting barely 3 months. It's really astonishing. The country is weak, it's fragmented, it has no sense of self-confidence or legitimacy, and it's crumbling at a rapid rate as the Taliban advance proceeds.
Well, Christoph, you said that you have gone to Afghanistan several times and spent time there. Let's talk about that, because is the Taliban today different from the Taliban of 20 years ago?
Yes, of course they are. There are, of course, a lot of the leaders which are still in charge. That is clear. But there are very tough lessons which the Taliban had to learn back in 2001. And I think they have learned them. Of course, you know, this is Afghanistan. This is a very, very poor country. Still, we have more than 80 or 85% illiteracy in this country. And that is something you cannot overcome so quickly. And of course, there is no administration to be fixed that quickly that will make Afghanistan one of the, I would say, usual countries. So Afghanistan is special, will remain special for a lot of time. But of course, now you can talk to the Taliban. That is something interesting. Donald Trump has tried it with his people. He tried quite well. And it was, by the way, in 2007 that the German chancellor wrote to me and they said, the suggestions you made in your book will be heeded. I was very angry to hear that, because my idea was that we very quickly arrange a withdrawal from Afghanistan with all our bloody NATO troops. They have lost nothing there. They have no reason to stay there. All the stories were wrong. The CIA did 9/11 themselves and things like that. And now I see how quickly that crumbles. I have predicted that there's no stability in Afghanistan, which we could have, NATO or the US or Germany could have installed there. That's the story. The Taliban have learned their lessons, and we will find out in the next months and years how deeply they have learned them and if there's a coherence within the Taliban, both regionally and politically. That's a very interesting question, and nobody, I think, can answer that right now. And I think the US will do their usual dirty game with their dollar bags and try to, you know, raise trouble in the area.
Well, Daniel, there are some analysts as well as regular Afghan civilians that are saying that the U.S. made a deal with the Taliban and that government forces in many areas are simply pulling back and allowing the Taliban to take over. Your take of this analysis?
I'm not aware of any deal. I'd be very surprised if there was. It's possible, I suppose, but there's no evidence that I've seen in favor of it. I want to stress one thing. The CIA did not cause 9/11. 9/11 was caused by Al-Qaeda with apparently significant backing by certain elements of the Saudi government. It had nothing to do with the CIA. And I also assume the Taliban, I have no reason to disbelieve this, but I assume the Taliban is the same profoundly reactionary force it was back in 2001. And so therefore the outlook for Afghanistan is extremely grim. The U.S. has made things worse, but I'm not convinced the Taliban will make anything better.
What about that, Christoph, what Daniel was saying is basically the prognosis in Afghanistan is very dim. Your take on that, because you said that there has been a transition between the Taliban of today and 20 years ago.
That's some kind of prophecy which is being raised from a country which is doing its level best let chaos stay within Afghanistan, because there's a very simple question at hand. What happens to the U.S. if Iran and China shake hands and build a double pipeline of oil and gas between the two countries and maybe even include India into the deal? That would be terrible for Washington. That's their greatest nightmare. And therefore, they think the only chance they got is to make Afghanistan so crazy that no pipeline will ever stay in this country. So this is the real business behind all this big talk. And I think the Taliban are now quite able to, maintain as much calm if the U.S. is not disturbing them too much, to have that pipeline realized, and that would be something fantastic.
So you're saying, Christoph, that the United States wants chaos to reign basically in Afghanistan?
Of course they want to do that. They have done it in the past. They will try to do that now. and they will use their bloody dollar bags to achieve that. I have seen their officers run around with, you know, with these plastic bags filled with bundles of $100 notes, and that is the business going on. It will continue. Of course, they have some friends among the Taliban, but they have some friends among all the factions and fractions of political life in Afghanistan. But not to be in touch with the Taliban, of course, would be very bad for all of Washington's goals in this country.
What about that, Daniel? Do you think that the U.S. has a plan to expand the chaos there, as it definitely knew the capabilities of both the Afghan army as well as the Taliban?
Well, the U.S. has created chaos. There's no question about that. But the U.S. has no plans, because the U.S. has no plan. It's an irrational force, a nihilistic force. It has no idea what to do, and it certainly has no idea what to do now after its 20-year effort in Afghanistan is crumbling rapidly before its eyes. I mean, this is the greatest defeat the U.S. has experienced since Vietnam in 1975. It's a devastating blow. The U.S. is being shut out of all of Central America, which is now apparently in the hands of Iran, Turkey, Russia, China, and Pakistan. But the U.S. is nowhere to be seen. It's a devastating strategic setback. And the idea that somehow the U.S. is still in control, is still directing things behind the scenes, I mean, that's just ridiculous. The U.S. is, the U.S. is at a loss of what to do. It has met with profound failure in that country, and Afghanistan will wind up worse, not better, as a consequence.
What do you think, Christoph? I mean, the U.S. is still saying that it's going to use its B-52 bombers and it's going to support the Afghan forces. Do you agree with what Daniel said, or is there a plan by Washington in what it's doing and what it has done now?
Well, certainly Washington has plans for each and every corner of this world. And it is very clear that their plan is, well, we cannot keep Afghanistan under our occupation all the time. It's simply too costly. And therefore, they go back to this, chaos plan, that if they can't rule it, if they can't use Afghanistan, if they are no longer the big winners from the huge heroin business, then, of course, it is necessary that they help create this chaos. This doesn't mean that they control the chaos. It just means they introduce it whenever needed, whenever there's too much or too strong order growing in Afghanistan. Then they will try to destroy it. Then they will try to create, problems between the people. That's a business they love and understand. And they keep Afghanistan away from development, and hopefully, of course, they can, pay some of the Taliban to kill some Iranians, as they have done in the past in Herat. Iran has been very able in the past to establish much better diplomacy with the Taliban in the recent years. But, of course, this is nothing Washington is very happy about. So if we remember that before 2001, the plan in Washington was to encircle Iran and make sure that by occupying Iran, NATO would close, the big eastern Iranian part, and then they would simply need something in the north, which then utterly failed later on, to complete the circle around Iran. So this has completely failed. This strategy is dead, stone dead. But what they can do, of course, our American friends, unfortunately, is playing this chaos card. And that is something they are good at. They are doing it everywhere, whenever they cannot rule. And this is what will happen to Afghanistan in the time to come. And it will need a lot of, resolve and cooperation from the side of China and Pakistan and Iran, regional powers. Russia will be introducing itself into it. And see whether they can, as regional forces, evict American chaos agents from that area.
Daniel, what does all of this mean for the Afghan government? As you're saying, post-Soviet, when the Soviets departed, it took at least 3 years, but the situation seems to be moving quite rapidly. Your analysis of the Afghan government in all of this.
Well, the Afghan government has shown itself to be incredibly weak. I mean, far weaker than the government the Soviets left behind in 1989. It's really dramatic. This government is just crumbling in a matter of months. The Taliban advance is accelerating. The government has shown itself to be just so feeble. It's incredible. So as to what happens from this point out, I mean, I don't know. I assume that the Taliban will eventually march into Kabul, will install their reign of power from one end of the country to the other. The question is whether fighting breaks out between the Taliban and its fellow jihadis, the Al-Qaeda and ISIS, who have also established a major presence in the country. So whether the Taliban can actually bring order is questionable, and whether this is simply the opening stage in a new process of civil war is unknown.
Christoph, your analysis of that, what Daniel just said, whether the Taliban could bring stability and unity in that country.
They can do much better than it is now. That is quite clear. It remains to be seen how much simply the U.S. want to invest into chaos in Afghanistan. That's a question. There was a saying in the NATO occupation time in Afghanistan that you cannot buy Afghans, you can lease them. So there's some truth to this due to the terror poverty in this country, which, of course, the Western alliance wanted to remain, because as long as they are poor, wages are low. So that is the situation. They will try to maintain this. I think the Taliban leadership is very well aware of what happened in the past 30 years in Afghanistan, and they will find their ways to, kick out chaos from Afghanistan as good as they can. They will take some time. It's easy to make this very weak and artificial government run away, but it's not so easy to establish order and to rule the country orderly. They have made progress, as I said, but I think it's not big enough to achieve order soon, and there will be a huge problem that a lot of those neighbors, Iran, Pakistan, and China, mostly China, I think, they will try to tell the Taliban what to do and what not to do, and that's the wrong way with the Taliban. This is what I can say. There are other ways to convince them, to win them, and then install something good. But unfortunately, policy usually does not strive for something good, but for some gains. And that makes it a very difficult business in Afghanistan. And that, in fact, is the biggest enemy of order.
Daniel, I mean, Iran is actually calling for the end to the occupation in Afghanistan, along with security and unity of the Afghan people. In your perspective, what would it take to reach those goals?
That's a very good question. I have no answer, actually. The Soviet Union went in 1979, late 79, with an attempt, with a very flawed program, but one that aimed to bring the country, into the modern world. And it was defeated by mainly U.S., Pakistani, Saudi imperialism. Who armed the most bloodthirsty and reactionary elements in the country. And these bloodthirsty and reactionary elements are the ones who the U.S. then propelled back into power in 2001 when it invaded Afghanistan. And so no surprise, the government that the militias formed is weak and corrupt and fractious in the extreme. Now, Afghanistan is a broken country. It's been torn by 40 years of warfare. It's been devastated. What the outside world has done to it is one of the great crimes of the modern era. I doubt very much the Taliban can somehow repair the damage. I'm sure they will merely compound it. But putting Afghanistan back on its feet, introducing a note of economic development, providing for some kind of degree of a progressive social reforms, that will be extremely difficult in the years to come.
Okay, but of course, we're keeping our eyes on Afghanistan and fingers crossed. I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on the spotlight of Berlin, Christoph Horst, political activist and veteran journalist, and out of New York, Daniel Lizat, journalist and author. And as always, we appreciate you being with us here on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for staying with us, and goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has issued a chilling warning of the potential for further political violence, with little to no warning by domestic extremists who believe Donald Trump won the 2020 election. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Bevan Hurley, writer. This article is published under the heading U.S. Government Issues Alert Over Threat of Violence in August Tied to Trump Conspiracy Theories. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The Department of Homeland Security has issued a chilling warning of the potential for further political violence, with little to no warning by domestic extremists who believe Donald Trump won the 2020 election. Multiple conspiracy theories of voter fraud are fueling the belief that the 2020 presidential election results will be overturned in August, and the former president will retake the White House this month. According to a DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis bulletin obtained by ABC News, extremists are calling for violence if desired outcomes are not realized. The current threat environment is one which is fueled in large part by conspiracy theories and other narratives that are spread online by foreign governments, by foreign terrorist groups, and by domestic extremist thought leaders, and are consumed by individuals who are predisposed to engage in violence. A senior DHS official warned in the alert. Threats online of retaliatory violence had received much more public visibility in the last few days. The discussions and these theories have migrated away from being contained within the conspiracy and extremist online communities to where they are being the topic of discussion on web forums or more public web forums and even within the sort of media ecosystem, the official said. August has repeatedly been cited by conspiracy theorists as the month when the 2020 election results would be struck down. Donald Trump himself has fueled the narrative with claims of widespread voter fraud without offering any evidence. Supporters such as MyPillow founder Mike Lindell and Rudy Giuliani have further amplified the conspiracies that voting machines were hacked and that people voted, which are widely believed by Republican voters. The DHS said it did not have any specific evidence of an imminent plot. The department says it does not have the luxury of waiting till we uncover information with a level of specificity regarding a potential location and the time of an attack. Past circumstances have illustrated that calls for violence could expand rapidly in the public domain and may be occurring outside of publicly available channels. As such, lone offenders and small groups of individuals could mobilize to violence with little to no warning, the bulletin sent to state and local law enforcement agencies. The DHS bulletin says, as public visibility of the narratives increases, we are concerned about more calls to violence. Reporting indicates that the timing for these activities may occur during August 2021, although we lack information on specific plots or planned actions. The DHS official said they had heeded the lessons of the January 6th insurrection, in which a mob stormed the Capitol to prevent the House from certifying the election results, was that plans for violent attacks may be communicated on public forums. The department does not have the luxury of waiting till they uncover information with the level of specificity regarding a potential location and the time of an attack to act on potential threats due to threat of environment. Past circumstances have illustrated that calls for violence could expand rapidly in the public domain and may be occurring outside of publicly available channels. As such, lone offenders and small groups of individuals could mobilize to violence with little to no warning. The senior official said that one of the lessons learned from the January 6th storming capital is that information that may reflect a growing threat may be communicated on public forums.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.